We began some questions and answers yesterday. Maybe we can carry on. Maybe there's some more questions. And we can see where we go in the discussion. It doesn't always have to be a question also. You may just have some realization you want to share. And then we can develop that realization through the comments of the other devotees. So anyone would like to share anything or ask a question to begin? Yes.
In the process of getting my driver's license, I felt like these waves of like going up and down in my mood in some ways. Sometimes believing that okay I can do this. Sometimes feel like I cannot drive. It's all so bad. But I started thinking when I was going up to this test about Krishna in the heart, that he's the one who actually does everything in some way. So I would like you to explain a little bit about this, about letting him do it in some way. How does this, do you understand my question? How does this work? Like you are acting, but still it's Krishna who's doing the activity for the body in some way.
Yes. In the Mahabharata, we find there is one scene in the Mahabharata which almost becomes like the scene which just changes everything and which ensures that the story is going to go definitely in a certain direction. Can you think of what scene that might be in the Mahabharata? Something that happens which just,
Draupadi being disrobed.
Yeah, Draupadi being disrobed. That was almost that scene, which is like the most historic scene of the Mahabharata, is almost like the turning point. So many things happened there. But this whole incident of Draupadi disrobing being disrobed is very instructive, because we hear about how she's dragged into the assembly. And then Dushasan and all the other evil Kauravas, they are pulling her sari. And she's holding on. She's holding on. And she's trying to fight it. But then at a certain point, she realizes she cannot fight it. And then she puts her hands up and says, "Govinda, save me." And as soon as she puts her hands up, then we see that historic scene where Krishna is providing unlimited. So now my question to you is, was Draupadi surrendered? At what point did Draupadi surrender? Was she always surrendered? Or was she only surrendered at the point when she put her hands up and said, "Govinda, now you save me." And she stopped trying to endeavor. Do you think she was surrendered throughout, or she was just surrendered at that point when she put her hands up? Prabhu says surrendered throughout. Does anyone have a different opinion?
Yes. Is that the same thing, Prabhu? When Shishupala was killed, after leaving the Sudarshana, there was a little drop of it on the finger of Krishna. Then Draupadi went and tried to stop this blood.
Okay, yeah. So that's the backstory.
Whatever the devotional service a little bit to Krishna.
Krishna will always remember. Yeah, so that's the backstory. That's very good. But I'm just specifically in this scene. Was she surrendered throughout? Or was it just at the point when she stopped endeavoring that she became surrendered?
I think at that point.
Okay, so Satyanarayan says that point. Prabhuji, your name?
Kapil
says throughout. Actually, it's mentioned by the Acharyas that Draupadi was surrendered to Krishna throughout. So then the question comes, why did Krishna only come when she put her hands up? And why did Draupadi at that point put her hands up? And the Acharyas say that in our life, this is very instructive, because Draupadi represents that we have to endeavor. But there came to a point in the gambling hall where she realized, "I've endeavored as much as I can, and there's nothing more I can do." And then at that point she put her hands up and Krishna came. In other words, we let go at the point after which we know we've done everything. That is surrender to Krishna. If you surrender before that, before you've done everything, then it's not true surrender. And if you continue trying to endeavor, even when you've done everything, but still thinking, it's on me, and you continue, that's also not surrender. Surrender means, do everything in your power, and then be happy, and let go. But the difficulty is, that how do we know we've done everything? Like, how do you know you've done enough for your driving test and now I just let go? That you just have to make a, you know, say like, okay, within the time, resource and endeavor Krishna's given me, I've done the best I can. Now I just have to say, whatever happens...
It's between three tests.
Yeah.
This is the fourth.
Yes.
Okay. Did you want everyone to know that? I also no passed problem. My fourth test.
No
worry.
Problem.
He was so happy that finally it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. But the point is, so that's what it means, essentially, in your life. If you let go before you've endeavored, it's irresponsibility. And if you continue to endeavor, even after it's beyond your control, then that's attachment. Irresponsibility, attachment, surrender is in the middle. If you do it too early, you're irresponsible. If you don't do it, or you do it too late, you're attached. So you have to know that point. That's the art of life. And if you go to this side of trying to control, you'll get frustrated. And if you go to this side of being irresponsible, you won't achieve what you can achieve. So, yeah, sorry, Janana.
No. Nice to hear. Huh?
Please add to it.
No. I just like that point because I was really trying to find, you know, what is it you want to, what's the point you want to bring here? So, yeah. But that was a very nice point. And relates very much to, like, you know, this on Sankirtan that we see attachment and detachment, yes?
Yeah.
That we stop endeavoring or we continue. But then my question is, you say at one point, of course, you stop endeavoring too soon. Obviously, you're not going to the goal. But if you endeavor and you go beyond, mm-hmm. and I can't say we've all tried that, but I mean, definitely I tried that, you know, I remember once, many times, but, I mean, but anyway, you know, because I always heard 100 books, you know, that's like, then that keeps the doctor away, and big books, 100, I only did it once, you know, but the saddest, I mean, actually what, I only remember the last two books I distributed, and it was like the worst, because I went...
The interaction, you mean?
Yes, because it was like, I gave up endeavoring, and I was just like throwing the books at people, almost like, you know. But then my question is, what, you know, because obviously I went, you know, I was attached to the result, so, but that's not too late, then you learn, and then you go on. It's not too late. Then we learn from that experience. But if you give up endeavoring, that might become chronic. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you get the habit of just giving up in devotional service. And you think, well, Krishna will do everything, and then you're spoiled.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, say, for example, we have ignorance, passion, and then goodness. So one spiritual master said, I wish some of my disciples would come to the mode of passion. We're just in the mode of ignorance, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So sometimes, as you're saying, that side of over-endeavoring is more like passion. And the irresponsibility is more like ignorance. So generally, it's better to be more on the side of activity, because then you can kind of temper it and bring it back to a goodness level. So yeah, but it requires great introspection to know. It's an interesting question. When does endeavor become over-endeavor? Because Krishna said, or Rupa Goswami says, Atyahara Priyasascha Prajalpo Niyamagraha. There are six things which ruin your devotional service, and one of them is Prayas, which means over-endeavoring. So let me ask you, how do you know when endeavor becomes over-endeavor? How will you know? Because you're not supposed to over-endeavor. But obviously you're supposed to endeavor. So what will be the sign that endeavor has become over-endeavor? Yes, please.
My personal ambitions. There's too many personal ambitions.
Okay, so in over-endeavor, your personal ambitions come to the forefront rather than the pleasure
instead
of Krishna.
Instead of Prabhupada's
yeah,
ambitions.
Okay, that's a good measure. So one can immediately reflect, is it my own agenda coming up here? Yes, ma'am.
When I'm not conscious of how I treat others around me or how others feel in my company, or I lose my sensitivity and I get irritated or things like that.
Excellent, excellent. When you're over-endeavoring, you become so like blinded or so one kind of that you can't see everything else around you. Yeah, very good. Another classic one would be that endeavor becomes over-endeavor when other parts of your life go out of balance as a result. Right? So like if your sadhana goes out of balance, or if your relationships with devotees goes out of balance, or if your physical health goes out of balance, then it means likely your endeavor has become an over-endeavor. Because everything in life needs to be, Krishna says, yukta hara viharasya, every eating, sleeping, everything should be balanced. So yeah, so we should understand in our life when endeavor becomes over endeavor. But you gotta endeavor. Yes.
I just come to think about Arjuna and this Jayaprat, when he had to endeavor to go through the whole penances and the life. Thousands and thousands of them. They had put Jayadrat in the end, who had caused Abhimanyu's death the day before. And Arjuna, he made his vow to enter fire. So he told Krishna that if I don't kill him tomorrow, I will commit suicide and enter fire. So the Kurus, they put all their soldiers in front of Jayadrat. And him in the end. So Arjuna had to fight through the whole, all the palaces to come to him in the end. And then he tried his level best, and then it was the sun was setting, and then everybody started to cheer. They thought that now Arjuna will kill himself, and the war then will be on our side, because they were only afraid of Arjuna. But then Krishna, he made the sun go up again. So that how he endeavored. And then in the end, yeah, it was up to Krishna to put the sun up or not. Yeah.
And what is that verse in the Gita? How does it begin? Yoga kshemam vahamyam. Ananyaschintayanto mam ye jana paripashate.
If
you're ananya chinta, if you're one pointed in your meditation on Krishna, then Krishna says, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So Krishna will make it up. And that's like now Kartik is coming, that's the whole pastime, right? Of Krishna being bound by Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda is trying to bind Krishna, and no matter how much rope she gets, it's always short by two fingers. And the two fingers represent effort, endeavor, and mercy. So there must be some great effort, you know, on the part of a devotee. So, yeah, it's finding that balance. Thank you. I think you got the balance right.
It seems, at least.
Yes. Yes.
So recently, in my attempts to spread Krishna consciousness, I sometimes run into this obstacles of people not wanting to know about God. Like, they may be interested in like spirituality as such. Like, for example, I was sitting with my aunt a few months ago, and I was explaining her about the difference between the body and the soul, and how there must be some subtle reality. And she was like, yes, yes, I agree with that. But why that is, I don't want to know. Because we were like getting to the existence of God. And I see this quite often, actually, with my father also. Like, it becomes too real for them. And how do you deal with that? Is this just like, okay, you shouldn't go further, or how to deal with that?
Yeah, it's interesting. If you look at most atheism, let me give you different categories of atheists. There are many different tattvas of atheists. Right? One tattva of atheists is a default atheist. The people who never really thought about it, who haven't looked into anything, but they're just by default, they're atheists. Why are you atheist? I don't know. Why do you believe? You don't know. I don't know. Nothing. I'm just default. One tattva. Another tattva is philosophical atheists. The people who have actually thought about it. And, you know, are really like, they believe in the Big Bang and Darwin and, you know. Prabhupada said, the scientists, they say we come from apes. Prabhupada said, because they believe it, I say they're still apes. My father is heavy, you know. So, default atheist, philosophical atheist. Then there's another type of atheist, emotional atheist. People who don't necessarily philosophically even know why they don't believe in God, but emotionally they have something against God which is blocking them. Either it could be something terrible happened in their life, or it could be that they had a bad experience with religion, but there's an emotional block there.
Fear.
Yeah. So the emotional atheist. And then another type of atheist is psychological atheist. You know this type of atheist? Someone who says they believe in God, but who acts in such a way in their life that they take God out of the picture. And maybe, just maybe, we are psychological atheists sometimes also. And then there are transcendental atheists. You know who they are, right?
No,
they're covered atheists. That's another part, yeah? They're covered atheists. Yeah, that's another one I forgot. Yes, covered atheists.
Transcendental
atheists are the residents of Raj who look at Krishna and don't see him as God. Of course, they worship Narayan, but so there are different tattvas of atheists. And my hunch is most people who are atheistic are emotional atheists. There's something within them that emotionally doesn't quite sit right with the idea of a God. It could be a past experience, it could be a fear that if I incorporate God into my life, I'm going to lose something or something like that. So, like, we know, all book distributors know this, that when you're on the street, it's like a psychological karate fight, you know? Hopefully not a physical karate fight, but psychologically, because, you know, you're trying to meet the person. Like, yeah, have you ever looked into meditation? No, I'm not into meditation. The block. So then you just kind of say, yeah, no problem. Have you ever tried this? You try to go in another way. You have to basically try to circumvent whatever barriers they put up. So preaching and sharing Krishna consciousness requires a huge amount of listening and understanding where people are at. You can't take someone somewhere unless you first meet them where they are. So it's almost like, and this is what you learn on book distribution, that after some time you can't just give a standard line to people. It's okay, it's very hit and miss. You know, you actually got to listen to people, you know, like, I've seen book distribution, you know, sometimes they have a whole long spiel, you know, 10 minutes, and then the person, he doesn't even let the person speak, and the person just like, no, I'm a Christian, okay. I mean, if I'd known that 10 minutes earlier, I would have come in a different, completely different angle, you know what I mean? So it's a lot about understanding, isn't it? Hearing, not about... And another thing is, a lot of sharing Krishna consciousness is not about... Actually, is hardly ever about the philosophy in this age, because people are actually very unphilosophical. There's a whole bunch of other things that generally connect them more to Krishna consciousness than necessarily the philosophy. The philosophy is great after, because it almost confirms everything. But you know, if people feel that you're a nice person, if people feel that by doing this they'll get community, relationship, they'll be, you know, these things generally attract people, isn't it? So it's a whole art, isn't it, to share Krishna consciousnesses. And knowledge transmission is probably like 5 or 10% of it. And there's a whole bunch of other things that need to be done. Yes. Yeah.
It seems like people, they have to feel like safe and comfortable.
Yeah.
Then they'll surrender much more to the knowledge you try to transfer to them. Like if, in all situations, if you have a parent, where the child doesn't feel safe and comfortable, it's very difficult to teach him anything or make them like nice persons. But if you sit down and talk to a person, and no matter who he is, what he did, what his opinions are, you still think he's okay. Then it's easier for him to surrender what pictures you have in your mind of reality.
Yeah, like we at the manor, Prabhupada used to go on morning walks through Lechmore Heath Village, which is like, my God, it's like your complete stereotypical English village, you know. And you know, Prabhupada was walking with the devotees, and he went past some of the villagers, and Prabhupada looked at them and said, "Good morning, good morning." And then they walked down, and the devotees were like, "Prabhupada, could have said Hare Krishna, they would have heard Krishna from the mouth of Mahabhagavat, you know, I mean, just one name of Krishna, and why didn't you say Hare Krishna?" And Prabhupada said, no, I said good morning, they will look at us and they will feel, oh, here are such nice cultured people, and simply by that good thought they make so much advancement. So, you know, it's almost like sometimes we think, I'm not saying you, but you know, this general kind of thing, like, okay, we got it, we got 5 minutes to give this guy, save this person, and we got to just pack it all in, you know, and tell them. So yeah, Prabhu was saying, make them feel safe, make them feel connected. There's the old tale of the man who had his jacket on, and the wind said, I'm going to get him to take his jacket off. And the wind just blew like anything. And as the wind was blowing, what did the man do? He got hold of his jacket and he just tightened up. And then the sun came out and the sun said, just step aside. And then the sun rose. And then the sun just let out its effulgence effortlessly. And as the heat of the sun just came, then the man was just like, it's hot in here. And then just took his jacket off. And so it's like that, you know, like when you want to reach people, sometimes we're like the wind, you know, but then people close up more. But sometimes you just need to step back and be a bit like the sun and just let it happen.
Like, through love. You
know?
Heat them up.
Sorry?
Heat them up.
Heat them up, yeah. Heat them up. Yes.
I was just wondering about this psychological atheism, like you said that so Prabhupada said that even within our movement that there are many we won't, you know, like heavenly planet and like not so many want like pure devotional service and so I was wondering about, you see, like sometimes we have so many different issues, we are not going to discuss this here, but you know, like for example the new one with the big vaccine, like such a much big things, like devotees can start like fighting over whether you've taken that vaccine or not. I mean, how can you fight with a devotee whether they have taken a vaccine or not?
Yeah, this point of psychological atheism, like I studied at UCL, University College London, and every afternoon I used to go to Russell Square, which was just one block away, and Prabhupada used to take morning walks there. So it was a nice place to chant japa. And one, Tribhuvanath Prabhu, he tells this story that one day the devotees were walking through Russell Square, and you know, some days Prabhupada spoke, and some days he just chanted japa. So he was chanting japa, and they were walking through Russell Square, and then at one point, out of the blue, Prabhupada just stopped. And you know, like everyone just like immediately like bumped into Prabhupada, like, whoa. And then Prabhupada put his cane in the ground, and he just slammed his cane in the ground, and he looked back at all of them and he said, "There's only one problem." So everyone was looking around like, "Who's the problem?" Like, "Why is it me?" You know. So there's only one problem, and he said, "The problem is you don't believe Krishna exists." So that was so interesting, because here were all these young people who had given up everything. Some of them had become sannyasis, some of them were GBCs. And then Prabhupada just opened up that possibility that they didn't believe in Krishna. It was just like, it was incredible that Prabhupada opened up this possibility that you could actually be living and functioning in the Krishna consciousness movement and take significant commitments and responsibilities and still not really believe in Krishna. And then when we actually begin to think about it, then we think, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's, you know, how must Krishna feel? Sometimes we're in front of Krishna and we're just somewhere else, you know. Once I was in a car wash, you know, I don't know if they have it here, like a drive-through car wash. And it was the most strange experience in my life, because I was sitting in the driver's seat in this car wash, and this person was like washing the thing. It's almost as though he didn't even see me, because it's just his job, right? So it was the most strange experience. I was in the driver's seat and this person was almost just like looking at me face to face. But it wasn't really looking, it was like he was looking straight through me. It was just like wasn't conscious of me. And I just felt so strange. Like, wow, that's like so impersonal. And then I thought, my God, maybe Krishna feels like that every day. And I look at him. Isn't it? Samsara, the art of life. No, we're 100% over there, you know? So it's, you know, it's amazing how tolerant Krishna is. Yeah, to become conscious of Krishna. Yeah.
It just reminds me of one lecture I heard with Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, where he explains faith from, there's this
Lokika.
Yeah, you heard that? He describes that, you know, the initial faith that we believe in God as almost being blind faith. It's blind faith. And that's really what, of course, initially is the difference between Shraddha and maybe Nishtha, or yeah, and that we have to have faith in the process that brings us to Krishna. with all its details, but of course mainly chanting Hare Krishna, but that we have firm faith that by, I mean, he says it with great emphasis, that we have firm faith that, you know, by chanting Hare Krishna, I will be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because we hear, and I often hear myself, I hear my mind say, and I conclude, you know, not this lifetime, like this, mm-hmm. you know. No, but we have to have the faith that, and that is real faith. Maybe you can speak something.
Yeah, he mentions, quoting from Madhurya Kadambini Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that there are two types of faith. There's a Lokika Shraddha and there's Shastriya Shraddha. So Lokika Shraddha means a type of cultural type of faith, a worldly type of faith, where we're continuing on in spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness, more because of just the identity of, and the community, and the kind of the external factors of Krishna consciousness. Like, yeah, the temple is nice, the people are nice, the atmosphere is nice, the prasadam is nice, and overall it's quite a nice place to be. And that is what's driving one's journey. But as you know, that's quite hollow. You know, it's not substantial enough to really enter into a deep exchange with Krishna. So he says a higher grade of faith is Shastriya Shraddha. When one, okay, comes on the basis of those things, but then really studies the scriptures, really understands what this process is about, and then really says, like, I dedicate myself to the process. You see, for some people, Krishna consciousness is an identity. But when you go deeper, Krishna consciousness is a process. And when you take that process deeply, then Krishna consciousness becomes about Krishna. So broadly speaking, you can say this is Kanista, Madhyam and Uttam. For a Kanista Adhikari, Krishna consciousness is primarily an identity. For a Madhyam, Krishna consciousness is primarily about the process, the Abhideya of practicing Krishna consciousness. I've got to get my rounds done, I've got to follow the principles, I've got to do Vedi Sadhana Bhakti. For an Uttam, Krishna consciousness is about Krishna. So we want to get to that point, you know, like sometimes we ask people, what's the best thing about the Krishna consciousness movement? Is it the prasadam? Is it the kirtan? Is it, or is it Krishna? It has to get to that point where the best thing about the Krishna consciousness movement is Krishna. And when I see everything else in the movement of value because of its relation to Krishna, then we're really engaging.
Another time, Prabhupada, he, and this is also Bhakti Gyanma Maharaji, he mentions in one of his lectures, but maybe you could give your idea. Once Prabhupada, he got this really, really bad news, because you often, you have like, very nice conclusions of, but you know, he got this really bad news, and the servant or whoever who was there locked the door and peeked through the keyhole, and he just noticed that Prabhupada, he went into like laughter in his room. So could you please give us the purport?
And the Charitamrita says, Dandra Bhakya Kriya Mudra Vigyaya Nabuja, who can understand the words, minds and activities of a Vaishnava. But Prabhupada did say, you know, I mean, in this material world, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. You know, it just almost sometimes becomes so outrageous that you just have to laugh. Because if you take it, you know, Tribhuvanath Prabhu used to say that, don't take the illusion too seriously. You know, so there's a sense in which life is serious. It is a serious business in one way. In another sense, a devotee almost just sees it as a, Prabhupada used this word, a phantasmagoria, you know? And so, I guess, you know, the pure devotees have these different types of visions of how to understand things going on in this world. And yeah, sometimes you just have to laugh. You know?
So, coronavirus, for and against, is that part of the phantasmagoria?
Can you be for or against coronavirus?
as in devotees taking yes. Mean the vaccine, is it?
No. Yeah, you can say, I mean that whole
thing. Or just getting into that discussion.
Exactly.
I think everything just has to be maintained in perspective. We're living in this world, so naturally you have to interact with this world, right? So, what is that? Someone used to say there are three approaches to the world. Either you're indifferent, you're entangled, or you're informed. So, because we're living in this world, we have to interact with this world. So that means we have to have a position, we have to take a stance. But then at the same time, we can't get sucked into the world. So again, when you're dealing with the world, it seems as though there's two extremes. One is to just be completely indifferent to everything. Oh, it doesn't matter what's going on out there, it doesn't matter what's happening in the world, it's all Maya, it's all illusion, it all comes and goes. Just, you know, life goes on. That would seem to be a little bit extreme. And the other extreme is to get so like entangled in the world. Oh my God, coronavirus, the cases have gone up by 2.2%. It's like, oh no, you know, and the virus, and three people have gone to hospital because of the vaccination. So it seems as though the middle position of just being informed, making a decision, and then getting on with the real business is like the golden mean, isn't it? Like, I say that you have to be Kali cautious and Krishna conscious. So some people are like, Kali cautious, but they're not Krishna conscious, right? And some people are like Krishna conscious, but they're not Kali cautious. Like, you need to know about it. So it seems like you have to have factor in both things a little bit, yeah? Like, we're living in this world. I mean, Prabhupada was also practical, yeah? He was like, he was also looking at the news a little bit, like, what's going on? It's not like, oh, Prabhu, the news, that's absolute Maya. Stay away from that, you know what I mean? Yeah, we don't sit there all day reading the newspaper, but I mean, it's good to know a little bit what the environment you're living in is. After all, Krishna spends 100 verses of the 700 verses of the Gita talking about the three modes of material nature. Why? Because it's important to know the environment within which you're living, because you've got to navigate this environment. So, whether it's the vaccination or coronavirus or, you know, what the government policy is or da-da-da, I would say just be informed. Don't be indifferent, don't be entangled, just be informed, and then don't lose the perspective. I mean, that would be mine. I don't know if someone wants to add to that. Yeah.
I find that when it comes to, like, being highly cautious on like various conspiracy theories, whether they're true or not. There's a very interesting verse in the 7th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam when the Hiranyakashipu, he's terrorizing the universe and the demigods, they're very afflicted. Then they approach, along with Brahma, then they approach the Milk Ocean and they offer prayers to Vishnu. And then there's these two beautiful verses where it said, the voice of the Lord vibrated as follows. O best of learned persons, do not fear. Become my devotees and hear and chant about me, because these activities are certainly meant to bestow benediction upon all living entities. And then he says, I know all about the activities of Hiranyakashipu and shall surely see to it that they be stopped very soon. So I find this is very applicable. Like, let's say for
example, Krishna's got your back, basically.
Yeah, and let's say that the government is up to something. Well, then you stay informed, but you don't make it your mission to change it. Just stay under the radar. That's basically what he says. Stay under the radar and just focus on Shravanam Kirtan.
Yeah, it's so funny, devotees do that sometimes, like we speak about something for like 2 hours, 3 hours, and then after you're going back and forth, and then the devotees are like, anyway, we can't do anything about it anyway. And that's also dealing with like ISKCON stuff as well, you know? It's like, if it's not within your circle of influence, you know, like they say that in self-development, there's two circles, right? There's the circle of influence, and then there's the circle of concern. So the circle of concern contains all those things that affect you, that disturb you, but that you don't necessarily have power over. And then there's a smaller circle inside, which is circle of influence, which are the things that you can directly have an impact on, right? So if you imagine two circles. Now what the psychologists say is that the gap between the circle equals frustration, right? Because if there's a whole bunch of things that concern you and affect you, but you don't have influence, it's frustrating. So that gap is the frustration in your life. But then they say there's another fact, that whichever circle you focus on, that circle expands. So if you focus on the circle of concern, then you'll find that the circle of concern gets bigger. And as the circle of concern gets bigger, your frustration gets bigger. But if you focus on the circle of influence, the smaller one in between, you know what happens? Your circle of influence expands. And because it expands, the frustration decreases. Because you're working with what you can work with, you know. For so much of our life, you know, we're just dealing with things, or we're contemplating or wasting mental energy on things which we have no power over. It's just a complete drain. So yeah, definitely.
Doesn't Prabhupada also says in a parable in Gita that a devotee doesn't go into politics because he knows the ups and downs of this world? So he doesn't like consider politics.
Yeah, that's true. And then also, that is true. But then we see also that Prabhupada, the devotees wanted to create a political party at one time, right? In God We Trust or something like that. The devotees. And Prabhupada said, it's a good idea, try to have some political influence. Prabhupada was also meeting politicians. But yeah, it's like Prabhupada didn't, you know, he didn't put all his eggs in that basket, if you want to use that English phrase. He didn't put all his samosas in one basket.
See, it seems like many times when he met the politicians, he wanted them to accept his way of doing things. And
yeah,
they didn't want to do it. They said, oh, well, no, we don't want to do that. We still like this, or we like this. He said, okay, I have the solution for you, but you don't want it. And then he left it.
Yeah. Maybe I'll end on this because of time, but this is a classic video everyone should watch. Is Prabhupada coming to, I think it's the mayor of Paris. Have you watched this video?
Yeah.
So Prabhupada goes to this place. I think Yogeshwar Prabhu tells the story. And it's the mayor or someone, and Prabhupada's sitting inside. And so this kind of very important...
Geneva? Is it Geneva?
I thought it was France. It was definitely...
But that's the French part of Switzerland, but anyway, I can't.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I have a feeling it was Paris.
It is Paris.
It's
the governor of Paris.
Yeah.
And they made this whole setup for Prabhupada. He's the next most important person in France.
Yeah, and then Prabhupada wouldn't stand up.
Yeah,
right?
He said, "Who should I stand up?"
Yeah, he goes, Prabhupada said, no, and you can see, like, on the videos, the devotees are like, and he's not standing up. He said, "Why should I stand up?" And then Prabhupada just gives this heavy lecture. He just gives this heavy lecture about what is the duty of a official. And the interesting thing is, Prabhupada was in there, in that official place, meeting the mayor or whoever it was. But at the same time, Prabhupada had told the devotees to go downtown on the Paris metro and just do Harinam and distribute books, and they were getting arrested for that. So it wasn't like, you know, like, Prabhupada was here, but he knew, like, okay, it's not just here. We just got to get that, get out there on the grassroots and do something. So Prabhupada was just trying every avenue to share Krishna consciousness. And yeah, it's like, you know, politics, okay, however much you can do, you do, and then you just move on, you know? It's like,
there were these nice politicians also who gave Jayapataka Maharaj a passport, very well. They could help.
They can help also, yeah. Prabhupada, he met Indira Gandhi and all of these people, and Prabhupada was also connecting with them. But, yeah.
This story in Paris, it started with a woman they helped in the airport, where she don't have any like welcome committee for this Indian ambassador. And then the devotees help by greeting this Indian ambassador and making him welcome. And then she does so that Prabhupada meets the governor of Paris. Yeah. And actually there's no recording of it by sound because Rujakirti couldn't make this tape recorder work. So everything we know from there is one of the Matajis who comes back to the devotees and she just remembered exactly what is said and can repeat it. It's in the following Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah, following Srila Prabhupada. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai!